Hey, this is Brian with Mid-City Vineyard Church, located in the heart of New Orleans, Louisiana. We worship on Sunday mornings at 10 o'clock if you're ever looking for a place to connect and worship with a faith community. You can learn a little bit more about us on Instagram, at Mid-City Vineyard, Facebook, Mid-City Vineyard, and of course online, midcityvineyard.org. The last couple of weeks we've been in a series that we entitled Soul Care, we're really looking at a couple of different practices that could really help us as we learn how to care for the essence of our being, care for our souls. And so this week, our conversation was all about the importance of creating space in our lives, creating margin through the practice of solitude, finding time to just be off by yourself, maybe just multiple short times throughout your day, or maybe other creative ideas that would really work for you. So let's head on over to the conversation. Thanks for joining us. Much peace to you. As I mentioned last week, we know how to take care of ourselves physically for the most part. I was talking to someone this morning and they're like, yeah, I knocked all the sugar out of my life. And it's like, well, kicking sugar out of your life is good for your physical health. If you decide to exercise, you know, that's good for your physical health. We know how to take care of ourselves physically. We have ideas on how to take care of ourselves emotionally and mentally. But the more people I run into, taking care of our actual soul is just not something we know how to do very well. It's not something we're overly familiar with. And it's when I talk about our soul, again, I want to remind you, I'm talking about, I define soul for the purposes of this series as the essence of your being, that your soul encompasses everything, physical and mental and emotional and psychological, spiritual, all that stuff. But the very essence of your being, when you take care of your soul, it's good for your whole self. But all of us get involved and so involved in life at some point, sometime along the way, that we kind of are taking care of our soul becomes the last thing that we choose to do, is really what it comes down to. And we discussed burnout. I just gave you a quote last week, but a lot of times we think that burnout comes from giving all that I have, and so it leads to an emptiness. But the truth is, the truer definition of burnout from a soul full place is giving out of nothing. See, we think we give till we're empty, but true burnout is when we keep giving, but we have nothing to give. So we're giving out of nothingness. And the way we get there is by burning it at both ends for so long, then we have nothing, but then we keep trying to do it, and then you get burnt out. And when you get burnt out, burnout is a much bigger thing than most people think, I mean, or give credit to. Burnout's the kind of thing that leads people to resign from their jobs, leave their marriages. I mean, burnout is the kind of thing that it has major effects on us, and we think oftentimes, well, I gave so much to it and now I'm empty. Now, probably what happened is you gave so much and then you became empty, and then you kept giving so much out of that emptiness that it leads to a place of just complete hopelessness, distress, etc. Is there a way to avoid that? Maybe not. I guess it depends on kind of what the total situation is, and all the elements that go into it. But I do believe that taking care of our souls helps us to not move to a place where we're giving out of nothingness, if that makes sense. In the scriptures, I really love this passage. If you have your phone and you want to pull this up, I'm going to read parts of it. But in Matthew chapter 6, this is one of the places in Mark chapter 6, this is just one of those moments that we look at. And, you know, everything that we do as followers of Christ, we come from the model of watching Jesus. Jesus is kind of Jesus is our spiritual guru who we look to model our lives after. Hence, Christ followers. All the spiritual gurus, though, would talk this stuff. Because all the spiritual gurus, whether it was Muhammad or Gandhi or MLK or the Buddha, I mean, whoever, they were all teaching these same kinds of things on, like, your soul is very important to take care of, and there are some very key ways that you can go about taking care of your soul. Jesus is the prime example that we look to. In Matthew chapter 6, I'm going to read this out of order. So, yeah, it doesn't look like anybody's following along. So I'll read this out of order. But I would encourage you to go back and read this at some point, Matthew chapter 6, basically 7 through 44. Here's something that happens. There was a man by the name of Herod who was ruling over Jerusalem at the time. And Herod became very upset with John the Baptist. John the Baptist was Jesus' cousin. Jesus' cousin, John the Baptist, was walking around preaching and telling people, hey, look to Jesus, look to Jesus, look to Jesus. Jesus is a good dude. He's coming around. He's going to start forgiving people of their sins and healing people and talking about the kingdom of God. Look to Jesus. Herod became very angry with John the Baptist at one point because John the Baptist started talking about Herod's personal life. Herod had taken his brother's wife and made his brother's wife his own. So John the Baptist started speaking publicly saying, hey, Herod's a bit of a dog. He shouldn't have done this. Well, Herod's new wife became very upset with John the Baptist and asked Herod, hey, for a gift for me, would you cut this guy's head off and just execute John the Baptist? And Herod's like, well, yeah, anything for you. I guess that's how it worked in the old days. So he arrests John the Baptist, throws him in a dungeon, and within a few days, has him executed. John's head is severed from his body. Head's brought in to Herod. Herod presents it to this new wife, and now John's not going to be a problem anymore. On hearing, in the book of Mark, it says, on hearing of John's death, the disciples came, and they took John's body, and they laid it in a tomb. I guess, so they took his headless body. I don't know where his head went, but they took his body, and they laid it in a tomb. It says, a little while later, Jesus comes to the disciples, and he says, hey, I actually want to take you guys, and I want to send you out to kind of start doing some of the work that I've been showing you, some of the work that I've been teaching you. I want you to take nothing with you. Don't take a bag. Don't take anything. Don't take money. Don't take food. No bread. I want you to, wherever you go, I want you to enter into a house, and I want you to stay at that house for some time until it's time to leave the town. And when you go into the house, I want you to bless the house. I want you to minister in the house. I want you to pray for the people. I want you to love on the people. And if there's a particular town or village or house that doesn't welcome you, I want you to shake the dust off your feet as a testimony against them and then leave and go to the next place. And so it says the disciples went around and they preached that the people should repent. Remember, basically they were preaching, hey, change your mind. The way that you're going is it's a dead end. Jesus is showing us a new way to follow the ways of God. And it says they drove out demons, they anointed people, they prayed for sick people, they saw people healed, all these kinds of things. When the disciples came back, they were all excited. And they were like, wow, Jesus, all this great stuff was happening. We were casting out demons and healing people. Amazing stuff was happening. It says the apostles gathered around. They told everything that they had done. And then because so many people were coming around, people were coming to hear their stories. And the people didn't have a chance to eat. So like these large crowds were gathering. And then Jesus says to his disciples, he says, hey, come with me. Come over here by yourselves. We're going to go off to a quiet place away from all these people so that we can get some rest. That's really interesting because like all these people are gathering around. They want to hear these stories. The disciples are excited. They're talking to Jesus. And Jesus says, hey, let's leave all these people, all this important work, and let's go over there where it's quiet because I want you guys to get some rest. Well, the story gets kind of funny. It says they went by themselves to a solitary place by boat. But the people saw them leaving. They recognized that they were leaving. And so the people ran around and beat them to that place where they were going, to the solitary place. So now the people are there. Well, this is the story where all these people, you know, in one book it says there are 5,000 people that showed up. And Jesus was trying to get his disciples to go off and rest. And now all these people, and so Jesus says, okay, well, let's do this. Let's feed them. Give me some loaves of bread. Give me some fish. Let's figure this thing out. Jesus blesses it, makes more. And then it says later that night, it says immediately Jesus then told his disciples, here's what I want you to do. Now the people have been fed. Get in the boat. Go ahead to the other side. I guess a different other side. And Jesus says, I'll dismiss the crowd. I'll get rid of the crowd. Well, he doesn't say it like that. I'll gently let the crowd go. You guys go ahead now, get in the boat, and get off to this solitary place. So twice in this passage, Jesus tells his disciples, listen, the work that you've been doing is fantastic. I mean, you guys, listen, you were feeding people. You were healing people. You were preaching. You were doing all these wonderful things. All the things that I've asked you to do, all the things that I've enlisted you for, all the things that you signed up for. But it's also important to me that you go off and you get some rest. Because I want you to last for a while. I want you to be able to do these kinds of things. In a way, you guys haven't even had the opportunity to grieve John. You know, our friend. I mean, so, and if you just keep going at this speed, all you're going to do is you'll repress it, you'll repress it, you'll repress it. And then, you know how this works. I'm sure you know how this works. But in 6 months, 8 months, 12 months, for some of us in 6 years, we realize, geez, you know, I never even really dealt with, or I never even grieved. I never even put, you know, because I threw myself. This is classic humanity. I threw myself into X in order to forget Y. Or I threw myself into A in order to not have to deal with B, or whatever it might be. And I have found in my own experience that, you know, we're kind of taught, we are. I find this in a lot of the reading that I do, Americans primarily, we're taught, or it's caught, that a crowded schedule and nonstop conditions is kind of how we define importance. I mentioned this last week about busyness. But what, how have you been? Busy. No, how have you been? I've just been busy. I think there's something to it. I read somewhere, you know, if you were to walk into a doctor's office and there was nobody in the waiting room, and you looked as you were signing in and you looked in the back and the doctor was just sitting there reading the latest medical journal, you'd kind of wonder, is this guy worth his salt? I mean, how come there's nobody in the waiting room? And how does this guy have time to read? Although, if you really think about it, maybe it's good if you have a doctor that has time to read and continue educating his or herself. But we don't think like that. The waiting room's packed. The doctor is going. You know how that goes. You go into your little room. Your appointment was for 11:30. 12:15, the doctor finally walks in. Oh, this must be a good doctor. It's miserable. We have this thought, consciously or subconsciously, that moving quickly, moving at quick speeds, that's what makes us important. That's what makes life worth living. That's where we get our value from. And yet, we follow Jesus, who says, I want to invite you to a life that is free and light. It's one of our key verses around here. I've come to give you life to the fullness. I want you to invite you to a free and light life. So the question is, how can you and I be present to one another? How can we be present to God? How can we be present to ourselves, to our internal self, if we are always busy? If our schedule is always overcrowded? If every moment of every day is about getting from A to B to C to D to E? And I would suggest that margin is good for the soul. I would suggest that it's good for our life. I would suggest that it's good for the people in our lives. I think that margin built into our lives is good for actual our work, our production, our ability to produce. Just in general, I would say that margin is good. But margin is not going to happen in your life or my life unless we actually decide I'm going to work on building margin, creating space. And nobody is going to create this space for you. Here's a thought for you. There's a difference between experiencing connection with God and talking about connection with God. We talk about it every week. But how many of us are moving from this space and then allowing ourselves the experience of connection with God throughout our week? Some of us are and some of us aren't. I mean, that's how everything we talk about is. And sometimes you're doing better at it and sometimes you're doing worse at it. That's how it is. I get it. But how are we doing right now? Because margin, and I'm going to interchange margin and solitude. I think that there's something about for me, creating margin is creating space to be alone with yourself, solitude in a sense, away from the radio, away from the technology, away from the boss, away from the employees, away from the partner, away from the kids, yes, where you create space so that you can listen. You can listen for God. You can listen to your own soul. Here's the thing about the soul. The more I sit with people and the more I recognize that the soul is very shy. Your soul is shy. And here's what I mean by that. There's a reason that you act the way you act around people. You're always trying, I am always trying to portray the image that I want people to know about me. It's called the false self. We all own one. Or the shadow self, or the glittering image. Spiritual writers have been writing about this for forever and a day. But we all own a false self, and it's that self that we think is the best version of ourselves. And so that's the self that we put out there. A lot of times, though, not all the time, but a lot of times, though, it's not our truest self. Because a lot of times for us, at the core of our being, there's insecurity, there's a feeling of lack of being valuable. There's things we don't like about ourselves. There's discontentment with how we might handle this situation, or how we might be that way, or do they think this, or do they think that. And so that's the depths of our soul and what we're really like and who we really are. That's ultimately where we need to find the peace and the rest and the grace and the mercy of God, where God says, I know all that stuff about you. And by golly, I love you. I love you. I just love you. Oh, I know you struggle with that addiction. I know that you talk too much in those situations. I know this about you. I know that about you, whatever it might be. I know you want to change that. I know you hate portraying that to other people. But I love you even in this. The soul is very shy. The soul doesn't come out to play very often, not in the company of others. And really, the only time we can really start to recognize what's even going on in the inside is solitude, space, margin. And it's in that space that a lot of times God begins to speak to us. We begin to hear what God has to say. We begin to hear what our own experiences are. We begin to experience more of God's love in those spaces and in those places. And we begin to truly learn that our value is not determined by how busy we are, by how successful we are. Your value is determined by the fact that you are who you are. Now, are there things about yourself that you want to change? Sure. Are there things about yourself that maybe even the divine wants to partner with you to become a more forgiving person or a more kind? Absolutely, of course. But your value from God doesn't come upon that change. Your value is already, it's who you are. God's already affirming and loving. But we just can't experience this in the hustle and the bustle. You just can't. I can't. So what could it look like for us? Well, maybe it's looking out for ourselves to some degree. I will say that, you know, there is this issue of technology these days. It wouldn't be good not to say something about this. In 2009, the iPhone came out, and it was designed in order to lead us to saner lives, more productive in less time. Well, that backfired. Because, you know, when you think about it, there used to be a day where you would take your dog for a walk, and it was a window in time where you were alone. Well, with your pup. There used to be a day where you would take a drive from one meeting to the next and you were alone for a moment's time. But now it's hard. I'm telling you, like, our neighborhood is like the dog walking neighborhood. People are always walking their dogs. And they're always walking their dogs like this. And if not that, they've got their earbuds in and they're talking. I Hey, I love my iPhone. I cannot imagine not having one, which is a shame, but I can't. Okay, there it is. That's the world we live in. Okay. But what would it look like to even allow ourselves a break from that, to allow the windows? Because you can't. The constant noise, the constant interruption, the constant drivenness to be more productive cuts us off, or at least interrupts the direct connection between us and the divine. Maybe what God wants to say, maybe what God wants to do. And I would suggest that solitude, for those who are looking for ways to more effectively practice caring for your soul, solitude is one of those things. A day off, we talked last week, prayer, meditation, contemplation, we talked about. But this is just another one of those moments. It's another one of those tools that allows us to turn off the stimulation, the overstimulation, to turn off the need to be productive, to turn off the noise, so that we can hear what's going on the inside. So that we can hear the voice of God. Back to Jesus and his disciples. Jesus is trying to teach his disciples in a very, you know, he didn't preach a sermon like this, but he said, hey, look, I want you to go rest. I want you to create some boundaries in your life. Because the people will always be there. There's always going to be something to do. And Jesus is like, and I know that, and I want you to do the somethings that need to be done. But if you only do that and you don't care for your own soul, then you'll have nothing. You'll be no good to the people. You'll be no good to your boss. You'll be no good to your partner. You'll be no good to your children. You'll be no good to your grandchildren. You'll be no good to your roommate. Whoever, whatever, wherever. If you give, and then you only give out of your nothingness. And we want to be free. We want to be light. I think Jesus is saying to the disciples at that point, listen, go, sit down, talk about John, share your stories, grieve. I mean, the emotional trauma of carrying your friend's headless body around like that, you don't just walk away from that. Talk about it. Grieve about it. Discuss it. Meditate on it. Take it to God. And then you guys had amazing victories. You were out there praying for people and you saw people get healed of stuff. And you saw demons cast out of people. Like there was some really cool stuff that was going on. Go process it. Don't just run to the next thing. Take some time. Create some boundaries in your life. Allow space. Interact with yourself. Interact with God. The fundamental purpose of solitude is to give us a concrete way of entering into stillness so that God can come in and do only what God can do. That's the whole thing. If you've ever been to a good counselor knows how to listen and allow you space to deal with your stuff. Most of the time in spiritual direction, we often say that we allow silence to do the heavy lifting, because it's in silence that people are able to really come to know what's happening on the inside. And if, as a spiritual director, if I fill the quiet space with just more words, that doesn't really. The stillness allows God to do what only God can do. And what God can do is meet us right where we are. In the grief, in the pain, in the sorrow, in the victory, in the happiness, in the great moments, whatever it is. And brings balance and brings awareness. So what might it look like? You know, for all of us, it'll look a little bit different. Some of you are really good at putting your phone on driver mode when you're in your car. Well, if it does, I encourage you. First off, texting and driving is really, it's breaking the law. So try not to do that. What? It's breaking the law. It's dangerous. Put your phone on driver mode, and then it doesn't go off while you're driving. Maybe you've got a window time. I'm just giving you any. Make a 5-minute meeting for yourself. If you live by a calendar like I do, I build it into my calendar. Really, like, hey, this is my time. Hey, do you want to meet at this time? No, I can't. I got something on my schedule already. People don't ask what. I mean, now you're going to, but still. Eat lunch by yourself every now and then. I don't know. Go to your car. Go to your truck. Go to a picnic table somewhere and just give yourself some space. That's I'm trying to move us towards here. Get creative in how you might do it. And I promise you, your soul will thank you. The well-being, your life will thank you. The people in your life won't know how to say thank you because they won't understand the gift that you're giving them, but you will be giving people more of yourself. When you start doing this, you will become a better listener because your pace is slower. Like this stuff, actually, 5 minutes here, 5 minutes here, 5 minutes here, 5 minutes here. You do that multiple times, multiple days in a row, multiple weeks and months in a row. And what happens is you begin to understand, just like a day off, time differently. You begin to see time differently. And you don't have to be in such a hurry. Even if you're in a hurry. Now check this out. But even if you're in a hurry, you might have to be somewhere in 5 minutes, but your presence doesn't have to be hurried. In your soul, you can be a restful, peaceful presence for other people, even in the midst of it. Again, these are the invitations of Jesus. Remember when Jesus says, "Are you tired? Are you worn out? Are you exhausted? Are you burned out?" Jesus says. "Well, then come and follow me and let me show you and teach you the unforced rhythms of grace. Let me teach you how to do it, how to live lightly and freely." Oh, what an amazing invitation. I want more of that. I want more of that for us. Because when we do that, we're more present, which makes us more in tune with what God's doing all around us in the lives of people. It just matters. It matters for the kingdom. It matters for your own soul, for your own well-being.